NATO threatens preemptive action against Russia. You may think that that's some sort of a comment from a long time ago or something that's maybe divorced from reality or something someone doesn't mean, but you can only take things at face value of what they say and then what actions are and what counteractions come as a result of that. The NATO general, he's actually an Italian general. I think he's the chief of the military commission at NATO, not some minor official. Gary, if you could put that full screen up there. He said earlier today that NATO is considering preemptive action against Russia following a string of hybrid attacks on Europe. A senior official in the alliance has warned Italian Admiral Giuseppe Cavo Dragone, who serves as the chair of the NATO Military Committee, said the alliance may need to adopt a more aggressive approach to deter Moscow from continuing its campaign of drone incursions and cyber attacks in Europe. And when you get into the details of that, there's other things that he's talking about too. There's been some train derailments and some in Poland, for example. There have been some factories in Germany that have mysteriously caught fire. Others, even some in the United States have had some mysterious accidents. And so the claim is, anyway, among this Italian general, is that we may need to consider some more aggressive actions to Russia to deter them. Now, if you watched our show from earlier today, I told you how ridiculous that is, the idea that this is coming out of nowhere, which is his claim. He's pretending like there is no antecedent. It's just, man, out of nowhere, Russia's doing all this stuff, and we need to deter them and to reestablish this deterrent so they know they can't do anything. Meanwhile, everything NATO has been doing for years and bragging about it endlessly, that there are 50 nations that are supporting Ukraine in its war against Russia, and they are providing all kinds of lethal ammunition, weapons, training, education, I mean, you name it, long-range fires, etc., to kill Russians in the Ukraine war. And I don't know. I guess these guys think that there's just never going to be any consequence. You can not like Russia. You can say that you can validate and justify what Ukraine is doing, that we're okay with helping them. And I would disagree with that, but that's a policy decision. That's something people can say. But what you can't do is you can't say we're going to provide lethal support to Ukraine to kill Russian soldiers and Russia can't do anything about it. They can't have a reaction. All they can do is die. And if they do, then we'll say, how dare you? We may have to deter you. And all that's going to do is just make Russia more contemptuous of NATO and saying, yeah, whatever you say, we're going to do what we need to do. And of course, see, the reality is the Russians probably have a version of that in reverse, the mirror image of it. They're probably saying, we're sick and tired of you providing all this lethal force that kill our troops. So we're going to try to deter you by showing there's a cost to what you're doing. But of course, it's not working. Europe and Ukraine, of course, just double down and do the same thing. And the idea that you think in the West that it's going to work against the Russians when it hasn't so far is not just absurd and ridiculous. It's potentially suicidal, because if it escalates beyond and we get into a shooting war, then of course it would be catastrophic. But in any case, it's not going to succeed. Now, whether this is just a verbal barrage, that NATO has no intent to actually make good on this, to actually take preemptive action against Russia, and we're talking potentially hard action, not just some cyber attack, but some kind of hard action, whether that's, you know, a tit for tat kind of situation where something in Russia, some factory in Russia will mysteriously burn, or something will happen somewhere else. I mean, we're already providing lethal aid and targeting intelligence, et cetera. So there's not a whole lot more you can do unless, instead of helping Ukraine, we just personally do it. Then that would definitely be an escalation and something that we need to worry a lot about. But this is all taking place in the environment to where we're trying to get this war over with. And of course, that is not going to bring any end to it. It's just more of this braggadocious and this arrogance on our part that we think, well, we'll just talk tough and that'll show them damn Russians, when it hasn't worked objectively for the last 4 years. And you can argue even further back than that, because we have continued to press the issue and Russia has continued to take counteractions, to include this what they call special military operation, which is a war by any other name. So I don't know why we would keep thinking this when it has backfired and blown up in our face in so many times, and yet here we are. But as I said, there are other things going on too. There are things going on today in Paris. Volodymyr Zelensky went to meet with his counterpart, Emmanuel Macron, to again try and to get a lot of more support, and certainly psychological, political, as well as physical military support. In response, Emmanuel Macron frankly continues on the same thing that he's been doing and says, hey, we got to provide security guarantees for the Ukrainians.
Ukraine alone can talk of land. It's theirs, by law, sovereign and grand. Security guarantees, we see, can't be discussed without Ukraine, with allies near, at the table. For they're the ones who guarantee, and Europe's safety, certainly. Frozen Russian assets, you see, need EU and nations at the table, solely competent, agree? So, on each point, it's key, respect for roles, for all to see. As for us, we'll push ahead, on what's our task, as we have said. Security. Guarantees are done, for Europe's, France's, Ukraine's son.
So, yeah, they said this is necessary, a security guarantee. Okay, that may play well in the Western media, but folks, it doesn't cause Russia any heartbreak, because they actually look at what's true on the ground, unlike our side. And they see that Russia, France's entire military, I think, is somewhere around 180, 200,000 total active forces. And of course, as you may know, when you see this total number of active forces, that doesn't mean they have, you know, 100,000 infantrymen or armor officers that can, you know, go on an offensive. That's everything. That's support forces. That's logistics, supply, intelligence, you name it. And also the artillery, the infantry, and the tank forces, etc. So there is a very small number of actual war fighters in France. And if France has been unwilling to actually use its troops to get into a war with Russia for this period of time, so for nearly 4 years now, upon what logic does anybody think that later on that they're going to say, okay, now we'll potentially risk our own national security and we'll get ourselves locked into a war that would be between Russia and Ukraine? I mean, why? What logic would France, that they want anyone to believe that, yes, we won't fight today, but tomorrow we will? Why? Why would you do that? And forget about what the Russians believe. What do the French people think? Why would they want their country to go to war to send their sons and daughters to die for Ukraine? Because that war is over. And this has been primarily an issue between Russia and Ukraine, though only because of the insertion of the Western military alliance, NATO. So as long as NATO stays out of Ukraine, and I mean completely out, then there's no reason for Russia to even look anything further to the West. Prior to all of these things happening, prior to 2014, prior to the Minsk agreements, and prior to basically the civil war that had descended upon Ukraine in the 8 years prior to 2022, prior to moving NATO into Ukraine, prior to in January of 2022, NATO Secretary General again emphatically saying, we will come in to Ukraine. All of that stuff, there had been no even contemplation of Russian military forces attacking anyone into the West. None of it happened at all. Kaya Kallas made this odd statement earlier today that Russia has, in the last 100 years, invaded 19 countries. That's absurd. I mean, if you've paid any attention to history, there hasn't been any. What she almost certainly has been talking about was the Soviet Union in the process of repulsing the Nazi Germany in World War II, where they moved back across. And then, of course, I'm sure they're also including Ukraine and Georgia, saying that they attacked. Well, that's in the eyes of the beholder, because it's certainly in the eyes of the Russians, that's not the case. That it was not that they attacked, that they were repulsing an attack. And then, of course, they had no problem going across those borders in World War II. And when NATO said that they would join Ukraine and Georgia, and then Georgia, actually, by the way, this is not a minor issue. Georgia is the one that initiated that issue, that conflict in 2008. It was started by President Saakashvili. And then Russia, who had peacekeepers in parts of the country and in that area, did not hesitate to exploit the opportunity. And they took two of the oblasts that were part of Georgia. But importantly, they did not take over the whole country, because they didn't want to. All they wanted to do was to protect their people and their ethnic people that were in South Ossetia and one of the other provinces. And then that's it. Then they stopped. And they never went any further because they didn't want territorial concessions. Same thing in the Ukraine side. They did not want to occupy anything. And that's why even after 2014 and then 2015 and then the Minsk Accords, that Russia never invaded anything else. They never attacked. They provided some support to their Russian ethnic people in the eastern part of the country after 2014, but they did not send their forces to conquer anything until 2022. And we don't need to rehash all that. But those are the issues that are going into whether this war is going to be over or not. And when we ignore all of that stuff and say that Russia is the aggressor and that they're not going to agree with peace, all we're doing is setting the stage for another conflict. We need to get this one over with and keep it over with. And you can't do that unless you are willing to acknowledge reality and the truth and engage in genuine diplomacy where you acknowledge the balance of power that exists there and recognize that there are paths to genuine, stable relationship. Maybe you won't even use the word peace, but there is a path to genuine, stable relationships that over time can be fostered back into peace. That's what we should be doing, but that's not what we're doing. And in fact, a lot of the public opinion in France is very similar to what Macron did, which is probably why he holds that position. I just showed you what Macron said earlier today. Well, here is Philip Turley, one of the commentaries for France 24, who had his two cents on what the French should do.
What basically will be happening here in Paris today? This is the 10th visit by Volodymyr Zelensky. We're just hearing from Catherine Norris Trent. There is a very fine and close collaboration between France and Ukraine over what position to take, how Europe sees Ukraine, the position of Europe as a backer for Ukraine. And I think many in Europe feel, well, okay, we've got the United States on one side. We don't really know whether they're going to continue supporting Ukraine or shift more in favor of Russia. We are much closer to Ukraine in Europe than the Americans are, and we have more to lose if Russia is to take more control of Ukraine. That's why we need to be present and show that we are a force to be reckoned with.
See, I mean, first of all, it's just a ding at the United States because it goes, there, we don't know whether the U.S. is going to move closer to Russia or to Ukraine. It's not that we're moving closer to Russia. It's that we're moving closer to acknowledging the balance of power between the two. You're merely acknowledging what is, not what should be, not what would be cool if this existed, because it doesn't. What does exist is this, and you have to make your decisions and your diplomatic actions based on the reality that does exist. You can in time move it in a direction if you're wise and you have patience and you're willing to employ a certain amount of wisdom in getting to different places. You can move it further in a good direction over time, as long as you recognize the realities on the ground. But if you say, no, I don't want to recognize the realities on the ground and I want to do things today the way I want them and I want them all that way, well, then you're basically guaranteeing that there's going to be complete failure and potentially catastrophic failure. And that's where we're heading here. And we talked a minute ago about this statement by General Dragoni from the NATO, the military commission. Well, the Russians have responded to that. Maria Zakharova today on TASS was reported that the Russians are very well aware of this. And she says, we consider Giuseppe Cabo Dragone's statement about the potential preemptive strikes against Russia to be an extremely irresponsible step, demonstrating the alliance's readiness to continue moving towards escalation. Zakharova emphasized, we see it as a deliberate attempt to undermine efforts to settle the Ukrainian crisis. People who make such statements should be aware of the risks and potential consequences, including for the alliance members themselves, she noted. So what she's trying to very subtly say there, or maybe not that subtly, is that, listen, if y'all have been paying any attention at all, if the West has been observing what the West has been saying and trying to do since 2008, really since 2008, when the first NATO declaration said that we're going to eventually bring Georgia and Ukraine into the alliance, and the Russians have the comments they've been saying before, and then what they did do in Georgia that same year in 2008, and then what they did do in Ukraine in 2022, after very unambiguously signaling to the alliance that taking NATO off the table will prevent the war, but keeping it on there, there's going to be a war. And as Stoltenberg said, we didn't sign that, of course. So we knew that war was coming. All we had to do was take that off the table. nothing else. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to give anything to Russia. You don't have to stop any support. Just imagine that. By just the declaration that we're not going to put NATO into Ukraine wouldn't have changed bilateral relations. It wouldn't have changed the military, the help that had been going on, because that was at that time not on the table. So we could have still had the relationships with Ukraine. Ukraine still, Kiev especially, could have been control of all of the continental part of their, or the territorial part of their country, minus Crimea, if only we had acknowledged that. But, you know, we didn't, because we don't care what the Russians say. Well, Zakharov is saying you need to. You need to pay attention, because when you say things and then do things, eventually we do take action. And so when you're talking about NATO taking preemptive action against Russia, which was the statement, then she says it may be against the alliance members, not just Ukraine, that this happens, meaning it may escalate beyond the borders. And we are foolish if we say they don't mean that. Russians don't mean that. Sure, they meant it when they said that they would use military technical means in 2021 to solve the Ukrainian problem, and they did go to war. Well, I guess they meant that, but they don't mean this. That is foolish to do. They meant it when they said there could have been, we could have avoided war entirely, and they meant it when they said, but if you press on, we're going to take this action, and they did those things. So the hope is this remains in the realm of just talk. It has so far. It hasn't turned into actions. Let's hope that it doesn't. One of the other things that's kind of in the news these days is, of course, there was some reference there that Zakharov was mentioned about the move towards peace plans. She's saying, I think these comments from the NATO general here may be another way from the European side to undermine these peace talks so that the war doesn't come to an end. Well, there's also a move in the United States with that, with the announcement or the position of Steve Witkoff as the chief negotiator for the United States, who is being called a traitor, and that he should be replaced by Trump after some alleged leaked calls between the Kremlin, where, according to the interpretation of those events, he was trying to, quote, coach Putin on how to talk to Trump to get to an agreement. And so what they're trying to get done here is that they're trying to undermine a lot of these movements towards peace. Now, interestingly enough, Peskov was asked earlier today, I believe it was, what he thought about these claims that Witkoff should be fired.
Ну, смотрите, прежде всего, ничего там страшного такого нет. Те голоса, которые сейчас появляются уволить Выткова, они и нацелены прежде всего на то, чтобы сорвать те пока что скромные тенденции к выходу на урегулирование посредством мирных переговоров. Конечно, будет появляться много людей, которые не будут гнушаться ничем, чтобы этот процесс сорвать. Но если посмотреть и почитать, если абстрагироваться от того, правда это или неправда, то ничего там такого страшного нет. И сам президент Трамп, кстати, он тоже, он же высказался так косвенно в защиту Уиткофа. Это обычная работа переговорщика, поэтому я бы не стал бы преувеличивать деструктивное значение этих сливов.
It's kind of a little ding there. The reporter in between some of those comments, it said, well, you know, it's being reported by Bloomberg, and that's a pretty respectable Western media. And he kind of gave the ding. He says, well, I'm not sure I'd call any of the Western media respectable these days. They seem to be all about exaggerating and making untrue claims. Hard to argue with some of that. We have not exactly been holding the highest of journalistic integrity standards since this war broke out, especially. But it's interesting, though, about that his position there. So it's not just the Europeans who seem to be trying to undermine the peace. And you can make the same argument about Macron, who's talking about security guarantees and other things he knows that Russia is categorically against. They're trying to say, no, Macron in that earlier comment, he said only Ukraine can talk about territory, meaning to get, exchange territory for a settlement, which is part of the Russian requirements. They say all four administrative borders of the territories that they annexed in 2022. And of course, Ukraine says they're against that. They don't want to be able to do it. So only Ukraine can make that call. No, Russia can make the call for them. Russia can say, as Putin has in just the last week, we're going to get all of the accomplishments. We're going to accomplish everything of the special military operation that we set. And that means the territory of all of those four OS, which Russia has written into its constitution already. Putin would literally have to change his constitution to agree to anything less than that. So it's not just up to Ukraine, because the Russia has said also, this is what we're going to do, and they have the combat power to compel compliance. That's the bottom line. So if we're not willing to take acknowledgement of that risk and we keep doing this, then it's going to undermine any chance for peace. If you get rid of Steve Witkoff and go down that path, that could also undermine the process towards peace. Who else would cover him at this late date? I suppose it could be ostensibly the top diplomat, Secretary of State Rubio, but he hasn't been very involved in this, and it doesn't seem that seems to be the priority for the Secretary of State from the president. But the bottom line is there is a big movement against this and a lot of headwinds. And so Trump is running up against all kinds of difficulties trying to get this done. And it seems like the only two that really want this is the U.S. kinda and Russia definitely. But they're also commonly saying we have the military capacity to continue on. So it's in your interest to go down the diplomatic path to keep more Ukrainian people alive and a future and a hope. That, ironically, the Russian path is the only one that's going to keep more Ukrainians alive. Just understand this. This is so important to get, and it almost never gets talked about. If these people trying to undermine the peace process here, and that are throwing all kinds of cold water on it from both Europe and the United States, and there's plenty in the U.S. that do it too, what you are doing is you're guaranteeing, not security, more death for Ukraine. If this war comes to an end, the death and dying can stop the day that something is agreed to by both sides. Until that day, every day there will be more and more Ukrainians dying, every day. And these long-range drones throughout the country, of course, all along the 1,000-kilometer front line, that's going to continue on. So if you just undermine the peace process completely, and it dies, then also you have condemned Ukraine to death. That's just the reality of it. Now, that does not seem to be lost on the people of Russia as well. In Moscow, and this is primarily a snapshot of what the newspapers are saying, and just like in Washington, D.C., you can look at the Washington Post, you can look at the New York Times, and that represents a view in the United States. It's not the only view, but it certainly is what a lot of people are listening to. Here is a brief description of what the Russians are saying today.
Will Trump's envoys be able to convince Putin to accept their plan? Geopolitical reality means we shouldn't count on Russia making noticeable concessions. No illusions. But there is always room for a miracle. The gist of this piece is that the West is to blame for the war in Ukraine and for undermining the rules-based international order, and that Russia has the staying power that the West doesn't. After nearly 4 years of the special military operation, Russia's war in Ukraine, after the transition of Russia's economy, finances and politics to a war footing, it is not impossible to convince Russians to tighten their belts, to ensure the complete and unconditional surrender of Kyiv and its allies. And already on the final ruins of Kyiv and the rules-based order, start building a new European security architecture from the position of strength of the victor. All of the above should be borne in mind by those who are trying to predict the outcome of Vladimir Putin's talks with Trump's envoys. No illusions, but there is always room for a miracle. The message coming out of Moscow in recent days has been that Russia is ready to fight on if it doesn't get the deal it wants.
Well, and it's not just the message coming out of Moscow. It's the words coming out of Putin's lips. We've shown you that clip several times where he flat out and directly and unambiguously said exactly that. So that is true. And that is the view for many in Russia. And one of the reasons why Putin has over 80% approval, because he's saying the same things that most Russians believe. And so believe them when they say that they will either accomplish that by negotiated settlements, what they view as the objectives of the special military operation, or they will take it on the battlefield. And you can just see on the battlefield, I've been showing you ever since this channel existed, that if you go back, especially if you look at where the line was when this channel opened over 2 years ago now, and where it is today, you see it is substantial. And it is a consistent, nonstop move to the West. And you can complain about it not being that fast. Of course, that ignores the hundreds of thousands of Ukraine soldiers who have been killed and wounded. But you still can't deny the territory on the ground. It's apparently this past month in November, just finished up yesterday, was an all-time high. We're still waiting to see the final tally of that. But the estimation was that it would be the most in a single month since basically the war started. So the bottom line is Russia has the capacity and they're demonstrating it on a routine basis. So that leaves us to the 28-point peace plan, or maybe it's a 19-point. No one seems to really know. The 28-point peace plan actually came out because it was leaked, almost certainly by people who want to sabotage it. And there's an interesting dynamic, in fact. Let's just take a look at that for a second. We don't know what the 19-point is that Zelensky made mention of last week, because that hasn't been leaked out so far. But because the 28-point was, it is seized upon all those who were against peace and hate Russia and don't want anything to do with Russia. And certainly they don't want anything that's going to have Russia coming out with any kind of what they perceive as a benefit. They have been attacking this point, this plan, as a Russian plan. The claim is that, well, this plan was authored by Russia. And in this this comment here earlier today by Professor Michael Clark, see if you can see his view on where that is.
The Russians are only really keen on the 28-point peace plan that was drawn up in Miami a couple of weeks ago by Kirill Dmitriev and Steve Witkoff. And the Russians have said that's the basis for some sort of peace treaty. And it's really a surrender document. And the Russians are sticking to that. And the Ukrainians, with the Europeans backing them, have come up with a 19-point plan, which they think they could maybe just about live with. And the Americans have got to try to reconcile the, if you like, the Ukrainian 19 points with the Russians' 28 points. And all the indications are that the 28 points are something that the Russians will not back away from. I mean, they might conceivably make some minor concessions, but I don't think there's much chance that they will come along with the version of the deal that then emerged last week, the 19 points that Ukraine can live with. So I suspect that though the Ukrainians are undoubtedly saying the right things while they're there in Washington, I'm fairly sure they're being lent on very, very hard by the Americans, because the Americans want to, as it were, take this moment of political weakness in Ukraine to make them sign something, which in other circumstances, I don't think they would even dream of signing.
See, and Michael Clark is a very well-respected person in the West, and especially in the UK. He's very measured. You see, he comes off very diplomatic. He's not a shouter. He's not a screamer. But he characterizes, he's putting a lot of poison pills in here. You just need to be aware of that. But I mean, in the middle of that soundbite right there, he's talking about, well, because it matters, you know, which is going to carry the day. Is it going to be the 19-point Ukraine plan or the 28-point Russian plan? It's not a Russian plan. He said, oh, it was crafted with Kirill Dmitriev. I don't have any idea who actually was behind these plans, who actually crafted them, whether it was reported that it was Witkoff. I'm sure, obviously, he was talking to Kirill Dmitriev and to Vladimir Putin himself over the last several months. There's no question that that's been the case. Obviously, you're trying to get something that both sides can agree to, or that the Russian side can agree to. Russia is on the offensive right now, and you've got to get them to stop. You're not going to get them to stop if you don't say things that they're willing to agree to. But the idea that this 28-point peace plan is something that the Russians can live with, he said, that's nonsense. Then you haven't been paying any attention at all. I mean, I'm just going to list four of the points on those 28. Many of them were okay with Russia. That's the reason why Russia said, by the way, to include Kirill Dmitriev, that yes, this can at least form the basis of it. Putin himself said that. We showed you that soundbite last week. This can form the basis of something, because a number of things are something that the Russians can live with. So that's cool. That's a good start. But there are four major areas in here, at least, that they're categorically against, and they have not hesitated saying that. And I mean, these are major issues. Any one of them by itself is not going to be acceptable, but all four of them are not even consideration on the Russian side. Number one, point number six, called for a Ukraine force of 600,000. Now, that's already been added to by 200,000 in the so-called alleged 19-point peace plan, but we'll stick with the 600,000. Russia has said they would contemplate 85,000. And you're talking about 600,000. So the idea that Russia would suddenly agree to sixfold increase on the ground opposite them when whatever is left over after this peace plan is absurd. They're not going to do it. Number 10, there's U.S. security guarantees. There's all kinds of details about the security guarantees the U.S. would provide. No. Why would Russia agree to anything that includes security guarantees where someone else would go to war with them if conflict broke out later, when they have the military advantage now and there are no such guarantees? Doesn't make any sense at all. So Russia is not going to agree to that either. Number 14, Russian. This is one of the weirdest ones here. And of course, you can only say these things about this Russian plan and Russia author plan and Russia gets everything they want if you've never read the plan, if you don't even know what the points are. Number 14 is Russian frozen assets are used to pay to rebuild Ukraine. So does someone have in their mind this idea, this belief that Russia is going to say, I tell you what, here, I'm going to force this peace plan on you right here, and I'm going to make you require me to pay $100 billion to repair this country. I mean, you see how laughable that is on the surface. But yet, that's what is passing. I don't know that anyone, these people who are making these claims, have actually read these points. They just see that it has positive things for the Russia, or they hear that, and so then they say, oh, well, it must be authored by Russia, and then they just stop investigating thereafter. That's part of the paucity of actual journalism in the West today. The journalists, and I'm telling you, I saw the ABC News White House correspondent, which is supposed to be a plum job that only the highest, most experienced people get, make the same statement. This Russians love the 28-point peace plan. It's absurd. They're adamantly opposed to that. And if she had even read it, she would have to say, well, except for this, I mean, it's odd that Russia would write in that they would pay $100 billion to the side that they defeated. I mean, that doesn't pass the common sense test, and it wouldn't if you didn't actually read it. Number 21 is point number 21, requires Russia to surrender portions of Zaporizhia and Kherson. Believe me, folks, I said at the beginning and have said several times, Russia considers, and this is from June 2024, all four of the administrative borders of all four of those territories. It's not going to stop along the de facto recognition of the line of contact, as Gary's showing you right there. They're not going to do that because that would require Russia to rewrite its constitution and then to say, okay, anyone of the so-called Russian, what was anyway, Russian citizens that were living on the east side of the line of contact, sucks to be y'all. Good luck to you. We're not going to do anything. And you're now going to, you know, be at the mercy of the Ukrainian government as whatever's left over. I mean, and then Putin would have to go back, change. He's have to get his parliament to agree to change the constitution, just like they initially changed it in 2022 to write it in there. And he would have to get all the people to agree and get the Russian military to agree, the version of the KGB, the FSB, I mean, all the oligarchs, et cetera. He would be run out of town on a rail. That one almost more than any of the others, even more than $100 billion. It's like, wait, we've already changed the Constitution. These are, according to the Russians, Russian territory. And for you to just give that up from a position of authority and power, I mean, no one would do that. And now that we're told that these 28 points, these four of which are dramatically opposite to anything the Russians are going to agree to, are even more pro-Ukraine and has even more. There's probably a reason they haven't released this yet. So they let these 28 points out, and those were leaked because a lot of people had incentive for the ones that were on the Russian side that they do agree to so that they could characterize the whole thing with that. But they're not putting this 19-point plan out there, probably. It's not being linked because they would see how absurd it is that whatever has survived, you know, that it resulted from these 28 points is now almost nothing that Russia would agree to. So it would be obvious. Of course, the Russians would not hesitate to say so publicly on the day that that is announced, whatever it turns out to be. That's where we are on this situation. So we started off this show talking about how NATO has threatened Russia with preemptive action. There's, as some of our commenters have made here, an observation of, I mean, we've already had some issues here in the last 4 or 5 days with Ukraine striking Russian, the so-called shadow fleet, which means a civilian tanker, in international waters or in other ports. They're not combatant ships. Which by itself is an act of war and a violation of the laws of war because it's a civilian ship. Some of these are not even Russian flagged, but it's carrying Russian oil. And the Ukraine side, yes, that's we consider that a fair target. Now, there's a lot of debate about just who helped them do that. Were they able to do it by themselves, or were they doing it with Western military help, NATO help, et cetera? And listen, that by itself, I think there's been a total of 3 ships that have been hit in recent days. Those are not from depending on who's counting. And there's anywhere between 900 of these civilian tankers in this fleet, or 1,300 by another estimate. So it's percentage wise, it's very small. But listen, Russia has shown that they're not willing to take things lying down. And if you hit civilian targets, Russia has a habit of tit for tat. So they will probably fire some worse. I saw in a lot of the Russian social media channels this morning that it's incensed many of them. And they're saying, you know what, this just, these claims that you're going to use, you know, potentially use action against us, and that you are attacking our civilian fleets, gives us every incentive in the world to say, we're now going to take Odessa. And this is the justification, the rationale we'll use, because that's where these, apparently these Navy drones came from. And so we're just going to shut that off and take off your Black Sea access, period. And then you can't threaten our either civilian or naval fleets anymore with drone activity. Now, if you don't want that to happen, then you can't take this action that could well prompt it. I don't know if they're going to take that action or not. That's, that wasn't official Russian statements, but it was some pro-Russian social media accounts. And yeah, that certainly got a lot of likes when I looked, because a lot of people agree with that. And you can't imagine that the Russian command and general staff are not thinking about those kinds of things, but you can be guaranteed that they're thinking about something. There is no chance that Russia is going to allow ships like you see on the screen right here to be hit and there be no consequences. They have been shown in, from the beginning, that when you act, they will counteract. That's just part of this whole this whole dynamic here. And Russia has shown that they have the ability to hit back harder than you hit them. And we see that all across the front. So here we are. We're just yet in another example. It's embarrassing for me as a Westerner to have to report the truth here, but we are unintimidated and uncompromised to tell you the truth, what it, no matter what it is, even when it's to our disadvantage and our embarrassment, that we are disconnected from reality across the board. And that Russia definitely has a position of military power, and they have all of the building blocks they need to win this war of attrition. And in enough time, they're going to. And the only thing that can stop them right now is a sober getting over this insanity that we've been having, recognizing the reality, and coming to a negotiated settlement. Russia remains at the table. They desire a negotiated settlement. Putin said that again the other day. It's very unlikely to me at this point, because I don't know that they trust or believe anything we say. When we keep doing one thing and saying something different, you can go back to the Minsk Accords. You can go back to the agreement that was signed on 21 February 2014 that was supposed to have resulted in democratic elections that got sabotaged by our side. The United States especially was leading that change of regime, and we were handpicking who was going to follow, etc. Russia doesn't have a lot of trust in us. We love to say that it's Russia who violates every agreement. I've seen people ad nauseum say that. They seem to be oblivious to the agreements that we ourselves violate. So I don't know if Russia would agree to anything. Maybe they're just saying this to put on a good face for the international community and others in the global South or in Asia to say, hey, we're trying. I don't know if they would actually do it at this point, but I can tell you that if we don't try, and we should make whatever concessions are necessary to get this over with and to get to some kind of possibility where we can have stable relations, and in time, we can even have peace between us. But until or unless we do that, there's not going to be either stability or peace. And the first bill payer for all this is going to be the Ukrainian nation. You're already destroyed most of its future, and it may never recover already from this. But if you want him to even have a chance, it's time to do something different. That's your show for this afternoon, folks. We really appreciate you guys. Be sure and go to our Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Podcast Addict. I know a lot of you really like to get this on the go. Don't miss an episode if you happen to be traveling somewhere. Go to podcast and type in Daniel Davis Deep Dive, and you'll find us there so you don't miss a single episode. Share it with your friends. A lot of folks actually prefer the podcast version over the video. And then, of course, we have the Substack also. That's been growing quite a bit lately. We appreciate you guys. A lot of you guys have been subscribing to our Substack group. We appreciate that. Share that with your friends also. Let them know that they can get the best of every day and every episode, to include some of the video too. So you get both of them there with the Substack there. And we will look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.